Welcome to Catchphrase! Woohoo! I have got some special prizes this morning for people who are able to identify the hidden people behind the screen. That's the plan. So I've got the answers in front of me. So excuse me while I get that ready. Happy days. Here we go. And the prizes, as usual, are of the chocolate variety. You've got some Ferrero Rocher. Ooh, we're very proud of these. Posh pretentious chocolates, because we're looking at humility and pride. And we're going to be thinking of a few different Bible characters, and we're going to be thinking about the link that they have with humility and pride this morning. And we're going to be thinking through each one about how we might be similar, about how we might be, unfortunately, sometimes a bit too much like them. So the first one we have, and in order to get it in, you've got to type the name in and press enter. The first person to do that will win the prize. And there's always a bit of a delay, isn't there? There's a 3-minute delay behind what's going on here. So let's see if you know what it is yet. Oh, there we go. Now, I tried to get it so that the sound would come on after each square. As soon as you know who it is, have a guess, have a type. You know, as many guesses as you like. There's a couple of characters. They're linked together. Bum, bum, bum. Do we know? Oh, we must be getting there now. People might be chipping in. In fact, people might have guessed and I can't see because of the delay. Let's find out. Oh, we've got to get it now. I'm sure someone knows who it is. It's Adam and Eve. Yes, let's see who got that one first. These aren't the first people we might think about when we think of pride, although the well-known phrase, pride comes before a fall, might make us think of this story. Liz Nash, you win a Ferrero Rocher. I will eat it for you in a second. Where shall I leave them? I can't put them behind, or they might rest there, and they probably won't rest there actually, will they? Look at that, well done Liz, that one's, oh you can't even see it, that's a stupid idea David. Oh well, I'll leave them there, but you have won a Ferrero Rocher Liz, well done. These aren't the first people we might think of when we think of pride, but if we think back to the garden, you know, God the Father provided them with everything they needed. They walked with God every day, they were there every evening, and they walked with the Lord God in the cool of the evening. Wow, what a position to be in. But despite this, there was a sense that they thought they knew better than God, isn't there? They knew what God had told them. He said in Genesis, he said that you can eat of any tree apart from the tree with the knowledge of good and evil. But the enemy whispered in their ear, and they allowed themselves to believe the lie of the enemy. It's right at the beginning of the Bible in Genesis chapter 3. And the snake says to them, did God really say you must not eat from the tree in the garden? The woman says, yeah, he did. And the serpent says, no, he didn't. God knows that. And the woman thinks, and Adam and Eve both think, oh, okay, let's go for it. They thought they knew better. They thought they knew better than God. They knew deep down what he had told them. But once the enemy had whispered a lie into their ear, they allowed themselves to believe it. Thinking to ourselves, I wonder how often we might be too proud to admit that actually someone else knows best. Sometimes that might be in a situation with the Lord and we need to admit that God knows best. But sometimes it might be just in an everyday situation and we need a bit of pride and we need a bit of humility to get rid of our pride and think, okay, you know what? Someone else knows best. The consequences of Adam and Eve saying we know best has affected each and every one of us today, the history of humanity. And even after they eat the fruit, they play the blame game, don't they? They blame the snake and Adam blames Eve. And instead of just having the humility of saying, yeah, we're really sorry. That's in Genesis 3, chapter 12. So I wonder how hard we find it to admit that we don't know best. I wonder this morning how often we're too proud to admit that we made a mistake. We're too proud to say we should have listened to someone else. I wonder if, as I'm saying this, there's a situation you can think of in your heart where you think, you know what? Yeah, I need to have some humility before God or before someone else. So that's the first one, Adam and Eve. Okay, are we ready for the next one? Bum, bum, bum. Let's have a guess. If you think you know who it is, press your answer. Oh, you can see something there. Oh, a blue top. Oh, you see, the middle one's normally quite a good one, isn't it? But not in this case. Any ideas? I might wait a bit and see if we get any guesses for who these people are. Who do you reckon? It's from our reading today. And we read of James and John, don't we? We read of them sidling up to Jesus and asking him for the best seats in the kingdom. They want positions of authority. They want positions of power in the coming kingdom. When Jesus comes in glory, they want to be sitting next to him, getting all the big decisions, looking good, maybe. And this seems to be a common theme with many of the disciples. In Mark 9, they're arguing about who is the greatest. And Jesus doesn't think much of it then either. And to be fair, neither do the rest of the disciples. In this story, we hear of them being indignant about James and John. Pretty angry, pretty peeved with them. As they try to overtake them to jump up to the best seats. Who's got them? James and John, I think Dawn. Dawn, you've named them. Yes, some good guesses there. Well done. Dawn, you're the winner. You get another Ferrero Rocher. Look, here it is. Ooh, let's get over there. Put them over there. So Jesus is pretty indignant, and the disciples are pretty indignant with this. And Jesus says, look, the unbelievers, they're all about power and authority, but you should be different. And he explains how he came to give his life as a ransom, to pay for other people, and that's a model for us. And as I was thinking about James and John, I was wondering if maybe they were proud that they were in Jesus' inner circle. Hey, look at us. We've been picked. We're in the special 12. Check us out. I wonder if that made them thirst a bit for something more, and that this pride made them ask a question that they didn't really understand. And it made their relationship with the other disciples, their fellow ministers, it made their relationship with them pretty awkward, I would have thought. I mean, the rest of the disciples wouldn't have just forgotten about it. It had been in the back of their minds, wouldn't it? Do you remember that time James and John got a bit above themselves, trying to get above their station? I wonder if any of that resonates with us. You see, there's nothing wrong with being proud of Jesus. There's nothing wrong with being proud of all he's done. But I wonder if we're sort of tempted to be proud in the wrong way. I know for me, there's always that temptation to round up viewing numbers on YouTube or our online services. Emma Einson, Bishop Emma Einson, talks about this. She's got a great book called Ambition. And she talks about something called numeritis. And she talks about how we want to feed the approval monster. She talks about the idea that we want to bring our numbers up a bit. This is what she says. I've noticed amongst leaders, including myself, I'm ashamed to admit, a tendency to exaggerate when speaking about numbers involved in ministry, rounding everything up by a few in order to make things look good. So 8 people attending a course becomes nearly 10. 51 people attending church becomes over 50. Tens become hundreds, hundreds might become thousands. And then she says, but Jesus told a tale of rejoicing over one sheep. He didn't round it up to 2 or 5 or 10. He talked about one sheep. Might be a challenge for us there. Good book called Ambition. Might be a challenge for us there. I wonder how our pride leads us to wanting a bit more power, a bit more authority, a bit more recognition. We are right to be proud of Jesus and all he has done for us. But we do that remembering that he tells us to be humble. And he's the king that rejoices over the one sheep. How often does your pride lead to you wanting a bit more power, a bit more authority? Okay, next one, let's see who these are. Bum, bum, bum. Who do we reckon they are? What can we see there? Not much. Any guesses so far? We've had 3 squares revealed. Oh, we've got a beard. It's not me. Who do we think it might be? Any guesses? It's quite a hard one, this one. Quite a hard one. Any guesses for this one? No one so far. Everyone's stumped. Although maybe the internet delay is helping as well. Ready? Any more? Any guesses? It is. If you were here last week, Ananias and Sapphira. Now, we looked at these guys last week. We looked at their dishonesty, their greed, but I also think these two people can relate to pride. We've had some good guesses, no one's got it yet. We've had, this relates to pride. I wonder if they wanted to show off their wealth. Did they want to show off their generosity by making people think they gave more than they actually did? Margaret challenged us last week, didn't she, on this? A great sermon. Listen back if you missed it. On the idea that it wasn't keeping some of the money for themselves that was the sin. It was their field. But it was lying about it that got them into trouble. Them saying, yeah, we gave all the money. Aren't we good? Look at us. We sold the field. We gave it all to Jesus. We gave it all to the church. We gave it all to his kingdom. Whereas actually, that wasn't true. Their field was theirs to do with what they wanted, but they lied about it. We feel awkward, don't we, talking about wealth and finance, but I wonder if sometimes there might be a bit of pride. Thinking back to that conversation we overheard in Caroline and Dawn's garden, is there sometimes a part of us that likes to show off, unintentionally maybe, about the stuff that we've got? That great new field we saw because we've got the best Sky package. That great car journey we have because we've got a really nice new car, or whatever it is there part of us that has pride in what we have, the stuff that we have? Is there part of us that is a bit dishonest with it? Do we have too much pride in what we have and who owns it, forgetting that it all belongs to God anyway? It comes from him, it's going to all go back to him one day. I wonder for some of us, does our pride in what we have get in the way of our giving? Does our pride in who we have and what we have and our pride in acknowledging it, that it comes from God, get in the way of generosity and humility? Maybe this morning you're feeling God gently pressurizing you, gently talking to you about your giving, about your finance, giving to charity, whatever it is. That's something to be challenged about. So another way of being proud there. Our last one. So this is your last chance to get a throw of Russia if you haven't already. Who won the last one? Let's have a look. Claire. Well done, Claire. You get a throw of Russia to share between all four of you. There it is. It's in the pile. Let's see who we've got here. Oh, now, if you're quite clever, you might be able to work it out just from that one, actually. Let's have a think. I'm going to leave it there a minute just to see if people get it. Okay, next one. Now, come on, guys. It's not Elmer. Someone must have it. It's Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Look at that. You're there, Liz. Spot on. Pam just picked up the post by Liz. It's Joseph. Liz, I will put your throw of Russia. I know you can't eat them, but I'll still put it there. Wrapped in gold. There's two left for me. Happy days. Joseph, well known for wandering around in the desert and singing a lot. And he did some great stuff, right? I mean, you know, this idea that Bible characters are either good or bad, it's like us as human nature. It's not that kind of dichotomy. There's good stuff and bad stuff. And Joseph did some great stuff. And when a pretty lady was trying to seduce him, he stuck to his morals. He went, no, I can't do this. You're married to my boss. It's not going to happen. When faced with his brothers who treated him badly, he wept and he forgave them. But he wasn't this perfect guy, was he? And it sounds a bit like when he was at home with them, he was a bit annoying. He was a bit irritating. Hey, guess what dream I've just had? Hey, look at this nice flashy coat. Now, I'm trying really hard not to burst into Andrew Lloyd Webber songs here, and I'm going to stay strong and not do it. But, you know, the dreams were accurate, weren't they? They were true. He wasn't making them up. He wasn't lying. But maybe the way Joseph shared them wasn't the wisest. He may well not have intended to wind his brothers up, but that's how it came across, and he made them jealous. And whatever it was, Joseph's dreams, his coat, and the fact that his father loved him more than any of the other brothers, I wonder if these were all things that Joseph was proud of. But they were also things that had nothing to do with Joseph, in as much as he didn't make them happen. Do you know what we said in the beginning that it's kind of okay, I think, to be proud of yourself when you've achieved something. If you know you're good at drawing or good at art or good at whatever, that's okay. It's good to know your strengths. In fact, it's good self-awareness to know what you're good at and what you're bad at. But when it gets too much, to remember that video, when you start showing off about it and forgetting about other people and how they might feel, that's when you might fall off your bike and come a bit of a cropper. And Joseph maybe was proud of all these things, of his flashy coat and his snazzy dreams and the love that his father had for him. But all those things weren't down to him. His father loved him. His father gave him the coat. God gave him the dreams. They were gifts that he was given. In fact, Mary, in our comments team, said this earlier, that very often these are gifts from God that we're given. And it's okay to be proud of Jesus and all that he's done for us, but it's important to remember that very often when we're good at things, especially in ministry, in fact, all the time when we're good at things, it's because God has given us that ability. God has given us that gift. So maybe you're really good at preaching or being a prophet or being pastorally caring to people or praying and all those things. It's good to know what you're good at. But we remember that all good gifts come from Jesus. He sends his spirit. He empowers us. He is the gift giver. In 1 Corinthians 12, 13, 14, talking about the gifts of the spirit, the spiritual things, the gifts that God gives us. He is the gift giver. They're blessings. I wonder what it is that we might be a bit too proud of, that actually they're all to do with God. They're all to do with God and they're not much to do with us. I wonder if this morning some of us, if we're honest, hold our ministries, our gifts, our talents in a way that's maybe so proud that we don't always give God space to take the glory. There's nothing wrong with being pleased when we've done something well. But let's not forget about God. Let's not forget that he is the gift giver. He's the one that blesses us. He's the one that gives all the gifts. Those gifts that we read about throughout the scripture. So when we're good at something, he is the gift giver. He's the one that helps us be good at that. So I wonder, of all these four things, which ones resonate with you? Just have a moment of stillness as we look at those pictures. Which one resonates most in our spirit today? Are we too proud to acknowledge that others might know best? Are we too proud to be happy where we are? Or do we desire more power and authority? Are we too proud to acknowledge that money and stuff is from the Lord? Are we too proud to acknowledge that our gifts, our ministries, our blessings are from Jesus? Before we sing our next song, I'm going to read a quote again from this book from Emma Einstein. I really recommend it. It's called Ambition. She writes, "Humility is undoubtedly one of the most important dispositions for being like Jesus. But it must be understood correctly." C.S. Lewis, she quotes, says, "If anyone would like to acquire humility, I think, tell them the first step. The first step is to realise that one is proud. And that's a biggish step too. At least nothing whatever can be done before it. If you think you're not conceited, it means you're very conceited at all." And she goes on this great chat to talk about how humility doesn't mean being self-loathing and being fearful. That's not what humility is. Being humble means, I think, acknowledging that all things come from God. And we're going to sing that now. And as we sing that, I'd really encourage you to think about those things that we might be encouraged this morning to be humble about. And as we sing, "Here I Am to Worship," we might be thinking about laying those things down before God. Maybe what knowing best, maybe our gifts, maybe our hierarchy and power. Let's worship God together.